You are a loyal husband. You provide, you protect, you stay. You believe in commitment, but you are lying in bed next to a woman who feels miles away. Years ago, the connection was real, but now intimacy feels like a negotiation, or worse, a chore she avoids. You've tried talking, you've tried helping more, you've tried being more patient, and somehow it's only getting worse. This isn't a rough patch, this is a pattern. And the loyalty you're showing is being used against you in a way you haven't realized. It all starts with one simple test that cuts through every excuse, which brings us to the contradiction you must see. Here is the test. It's simple, and it is definitive. The next time she gives you the excuse, "I'm too tired, I'm stressed, I have a headache," do not argue, just observe. Watch what happens 10 minutes later. See if that same exhausted person suddenly has energy to scroll social media for an hour. See if she has the focus to plan a weekend trip with her friends, or the emotional energy to invest in a long phone call with her sister. That is the truth right in front of you. That energy exists. It is just not for you. The devastating reality is this: she is not too tired for intimacy. She is tired of you. And this selective exhaustion reveals exactly how she views intimacy now. It has become a tool. This is the first diagnosis: instrumental intimacy. It is no longer about connection. It's a currency used to manage you or to purchase your compliance. You must analyze the pattern. Does the on switch for her affection only flip when she needs something significant from you? Perhaps right before she asks you to greenlight a major purchase, or to get you to agree to something you'd normally resist? I advised a client who saw this pattern clearly. His wife became incredibly warm and affectionate for a solid week, right before asking him to co-sign a large, risky loan for her sibling. The affection wasn't for him, it was for his signature. It's a transaction, not intimacy. And this use of intimacy as a tool is often covered by a far more confusing tactic. This is the second diagnosis: fabricated disappointment. Here's what that really means. You haven't actually failed her. She needs to believe you have. Why? Because it's easier for her to feel disappointed in you than to admit a shallow, uncomfortable truth, that her attraction has simply faded. Admitting that makes her the problem. So, a new problem must be created. 1 week, you are criticized for being too passive. You step up, you lead, you make decisions. The next week, you are too controlling and don't listen. The goal isn't to be met. The goal is to move. It is a manufactured justification for the emotional distance she already decided on. Which leads us to the root cause of why she needs this justification in the first place. The root cause is a collision between fantasy and control. Your reality is built on loyalty, stability, and commitment. Her fantasy, however, is often built on an unrealistic script of constant emotional highs and external validation. Because you, the stable husband, cannot deliver the impossible feeling of a fictional narrative, she resorts to control. Affection is no longer given freely. It is issued based on your performance. It's a behavioral reward system. When you comply with her unspoken script, you get a moment of warmth. When you assert your own needs or have a different opinion, the coldness returns instantly. You are left constantly trying to earn what should be freely given. If this feels familiar, that's your sign. This isn't a partnership based on love. It is a dynamic based on control. And this fundamental difference in your core values creates a massive imbalance. This is the moral asymmetry. Your loyalty is structural. It is a constant like bedrock. You are the same man on good days and on bad days. Her affection in this broken dynamic has become circumstantial. It is a reward. It is a tool. And it is conditional. Here's what that really means. When you have a terrible day at work, you are still expected to be the provider, the rock, and the listener. Your loyalty is non-negotiable, but when she has a bad day, her commitment to kindness, to partnership, and to basic respect suddenly becomes optional. She is permitted to be cold, critical, and distant, and you are expected to simply absorb it. You are held to a standard of action while she operates on a standard of feeling. This is not a partnership. It is a profound imbalance of respect. And this entire system is justified and protected by one powerful, destructive belief. That belief is the victim mindset. This is the mechanism that makes her unaccountable. It is the ultimate psychological armor. In her narrative, she is never the agent of the dysfunction. She is the recipient of it. She isn't cold. She is protecting her peace. She isn't disrespectful. She is speaking her truth. Adai, this mindset short-circuits all self-reflection. If she is the victim, then you must be the oppressor. This reframes all of your actions. Your stability is recoded as boring. Your loyalty is recoded as passive control. Your attempts to communicate are pressure. It is a perfect, unbreakable loop that protects her from ever having to look in the mirror. And this is the part most people get wrong. It's not always a conscious evil plan. It is a deeply ingrained worldview, a survival mechanism she adopted long ago. It is the filter through which she rewrote your entire history, justifying her feelings by recasting you as the villain. This victim framework is the engine that permits the most destructive behaviors, including infidelity. A partner who is accountable, who sees themselves as an equal in the marriage, struggles profoundly with the guilt of betrayal. But a partner operating from a victim mindset can justify it. The affair is reframed. It wasn't a choice. It was an escape. It wasn't a betrayal. It was finding connection she was starved of. In this twisted logic, the infidelity becomes your fault. It is the natural consequence of your alleged failures. She may even describe it in therapeutic terms, calling it a trauma bond, a connection forged with another person over the shared trauma of being with someone difficult like you. This is the ultimate expression of the victim narrative, the ability to inflict profound damage and simultaneously claim to be the one who was wounded. It is a complete abdication of the vows taken, proving those vows were perhaps only conditional from the start. The final devastating consequence of this mindset is that it makes resolution impossible. You cannot negotiate with a professional victim. You cannot find a middle ground when the other person's starting position is that all problems originate with you. Your attempts at logic are dismissed as gaslighting. Your pain is seen as manipulative. Your setting a boundary is called abuse. This is the checkmate position. It is a dynamic designed to exhaust you, to confuse you, and to make you surrender. Because as long as she holds the identity of the victim, she never has to do the hard work of accountability. She never has to apologize. She never has to change. She simply waits for you to apologize for her behavior. If you have been in this loop, begging for her to see your side, you already know this truth. You are arguing with a script that was written before you even entered the room, which is exactly why your loyalty is the worst possible strategy to use. This brings us to the great painful turn, the loyalty paradox. You believe your loyalty is the anchor, the virtue that will eventually be seen and rewarded. This is the central mistake. The truth is, you cannot negotiate desire. You cannot use logic to inspire respect. Your loyalty is forcing you to stay at a table where the game is rigged. You keep trying to talk, to explain, to fix, but you are met with the classic pattern. First, criticism over small things, then contempt and eye-rolling, then defensiveness when you point it out. And finally, the cold, silent wall of stonewalling. Your loyalty is what keeps you engaging in this pattern, believing a different outcome is possible. But the pattern is the outcome. It is designed to make you give up and accept the status quo. Here is the wake-up call. Your loyalty is not being interpreted as strength. It is being interpreted as weakness. Your endless patience, your unconditional commitment, your refusal to walk away no matter how you are treated. This has taught her one thing. There are no consequences for her disrespect. You have become predictable. You have become safe. And in this broken dynamic, safe doesn't mean cherished. It means boring. It means can be taken for granted. And this is why she might openly criticize you in front of others or share your failures with her friends, knowing you will still be there tomorrow. Your unwavering presence, the very thing you define as your virtue, has removed all risk for her. Your loyalty has become the permission for her to stop trying. I consulted with a client, a loyal husband in every sense, who finally understood this. He accidentally saw a group chat his wife was in with her recently divorced friends. He saw them complaining about their ex-husbands, and then he saw his own wife join in, describing his attempts to reconnect, his patience, his letters, as desperate and pathetic. The friends laughed. They called him whipped. He realized in that moment that his loyalty wasn't winning her back. It was making him an object of pity and contempt, not just to her, but to her entire social circle. This is the hardest part. Your loyalty is not building attraction. It is actively enabling the disrespect that is killing it, which means the only solution requires you to do the exact opposite of what you've been doing. This is the strategic solution. You must stop trying to fix her and you must start saving yourself. You cannot logic her into respect. You cannot beg her to be attracted to you. Your only move is to reclaim your own autonomy. This starts with implementing non-negotiable boundaries. A boundary is not a request. It is not asking for permission. It is a clear declaration of what you will not tolerate and the action you will take. In practice, I am not going to be spoken to with contempt. If this continues, the conversation is over. And then you must follow through. You must walk away. This isn't a manipulation to make her change. It is a necessary action to protect your own dignity. It is the first step in teaching her how you must be treated. The second action is to preserve your dignity by strategically disengaging. Stop participating in the fabricated arguments. Stop defending yourself against the moving goalposts. When she begins the script of blame, you do not engage. You do not jade, justify, argue, defend, or explain. You state, "I see this differently and I'm not participating in this unwinnable fight." This starves the dynamic of its power. The power was your participation. Now you must take all the energy you were pouring into analyzing her, begging her, and trying to fix her. And you must redirect it 100% back onto your own life. This is the focus on self, your physical health, your mission, your finances, your social connections. You stop being the janitor of the relationship and become the architect of your own life. This is the great paradox of attraction. Your neediness, your constant effort, and your predictability made you safe, boring, and easy to disrespect. Your new focus on your own mission, your new boundaries, and your willingness to walk away from disrespect, this creates risk. It creates mystery. It signals value, and value is the foundation of respect. Her reaction to this change will tell you everything. She may panic and try to pull you back in, love bombing. Or she may escalate her attacks, extinction burst. But her reaction is no longer your concern. Your standard is your concern. You are no longer loyal to a dysfunctional dynamic. You are loyal to your own self-respect. You are no longer trying to win her back. You are taking yourself back, which brings you to the one final, inescapable choice you must make. You must accept the reality of what this is. The hope you've been clinging to, the hope that if you just find the right words, she will become the woman you married, is a fantasy. Once respect has eroded to this level, recovery is statistically rare. It requires both people to be fully accountable, and as we've diagnosed, the victim mindset makes that almost impossible for her. Her change is not your responsibility. Her happiness is not your responsibility. Your responsibility is to your own life. You must stop waiting for her to give you permission to be respected. You must stop waiting for a sign that she gets it. The hard truth is that she may never get it. Your new path is not about changing her mind, it's about making your own. This is where the traps appear. I'm staying for the kids. I'm staying because of our history. I can't afford to leave. These are not reasons, they are anchors holding you in a sea of disrespect. And staying for the kids is the most dangerous trap of all. You are not teaching them loyalty. You are teaching them that a loving relationship includes contempt, coldness, and walking on eggshells. You are teaching your sons to accept disrespect and teaching your daughters that it's normal to give it. This is the moment you must redefine loyalty. Loyalty to a person who actively holds you in contempt is not virtue. It is self-destruction. True loyalty is to your own standards, to your own mental health, and to the example you set. This is your choice. The pattern is broken the moment you decide it is. The choice is no longer, how do I win her back? The choice is, am I willing to live the rest of my life like this? You have tried everything. You have been patient. You have been kind. You have been loyal. Now there is nothing left to try. There is only something to decide. You must decide that your life is worth more than being someone's emotional punching bag. You must decide that your future will not be a repeat of your past. This is not about revenge. It is about resolution. It is about choosing your own autonomy over a shared dysfunction. But for many men, this pattern isn't just emotional. It's combined with even darker, more controlling tactics. This is the over-delivery of validation, the checklist of secondary abuse. Does she use gaslighting to maintain control? This is when your reality is denied. You bring up a specific event, a promise broken, and you are told that never happened. You're being too sensitive, or you're crazy. The goal is to make you doubt your own sanity, to break your reliance on your own judgment. This is often paired with systematic isolation. She may subtly criticize your friends until you stop seeing them. She might create drama around your family, making visits so tense that you avoid them. This isn't an accident. By cutting off your support system, she makes her narrative the only one you hear, trapping you in her version of reality, making you easier to control and blame. Then there are the two final weapons, financial control and leveraging the children. Financial control can look like two things. Either she controls all access to the money, making you an employee in your own life, or you earn all the money but are shamed for every decision, making you feel guilty for the very provision you offer. It is designed to make you feel trapped and powerless, to make leaving an economic impossibility. But the most brutal tactic is using the children as pawns. This is when she recruits them into her narrative, painting you as the angry or absent one. She confides in them, poisoning them against you, turning your own home into enemy territory. If you see these patterns, understand they are not separate issues. They are all symptoms of the same core diagnosis, a relationship that has moved from partnership to a desperate, toxic battle for control. If this rang true for you, that quiet, dangerous pattern you never named, you already know what to do next. Join us as we keep decoding what's really happening beneath the surface. Question for you. What part of this do men still ignore? Drop your thought below. I read every reply.